6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes. Good morning, insomniacs, shut-ins. Good morning to you self-employed people who have the time to sit and blog. If you want to blog, I'm putting the word out now, morningsedition.com. Go there, hang out with the crew. No trolley turd people. Don't, stay away. We don't need you. It doesn't make any difference. You're not proving anything to us. We know what you guys think. It's all over everything. Let us have our own conversations, will you? Thank you very much. If you want to email us, sedition@airamericaradio.com. You know, I want to put this out there, too. We also have T-shirts, hats, mouse pads, and all kinds of stuff. You know, dog shirts. I think there are some on there at morningsedition.com. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning to you, Mark Maron.
What a day already it's been.
I'm a happy man.
You are a happy man?
Two words.
What?
Barbara freaking Boxer.
Oh, yeah, sorry, she did. Words. She did it. She stood up. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was.
I wish there were more, though. I mean, I'm not going to complain. I thought it was great because the debate occurred. It happened. I don't think we have specifics from the debate, but she got up, and it was monumental. We're going to hear about that a little more. We're going to go into it a little in depth, but I felt pretty proud of her myself.
I felt proud of her. I felt proud of Stephanie Tubbs Jones.
She was great.
From Cleveland. I felt proud for John Conyers, who's been doing this, and rabble-rousing for the last 30 years in the Congress of the United States. It's about time somebody shook something up in this place. Now, from the way you hear some of the Republicans who opposed even debating this talk, they make it sound like these people have committed treason.
Well, you know, they're just, you know, condescending idiots. We're going to play some of that a little later today.
Too.
But, you know, it's just amazing to me. This should be happening weekly.
I know.
In the House. It should be happening weekly. This is why the drafters, the founders, that's why they set it up like this, is so these conversations could take place and people could have, you know, real representation as opposed to a bunch of careerist, you know, greedy idiots, you know, running things, and cowards. I mean, I'm ashamed of the Democrats, a lot of them. I mean, what would it have taken to really make this into a monumental moment? What would it have taken?
Probably would have taken a guy kind of like Thomas Jefferson. Now, Thomas Jefferson wasn't a perfect guy, but Thomas Jefferson understood that the Constitution and the laws of the United States are living, breathing documents. They have to be revisited. They have to be revised when necessary. They ought to be scrutinized all the time to make sure that they serve the people at the time, at that time. That was something Jefferson very firmly believed in, Mark. And I think what we saw yesterday was an exercise in neo-Jeffersonian democracy, saying to people, yes, we do need to revisit the idea that our elections are free and fair. We're telling people all over the world, the Ukrainians, this one, that one, how they should conduct their elections.
Yeah,
and we don't have guts enough to look at our own.
That's right. And it was just one person, one senator,
one
who
person.
Had the courage. I just don't know what any of the other guys had to lose. So, again, not complaining. I'm glad that the debate took place. You know, Gonzalez was getting his mild grilling. You know, what was
grilled
that?
Rare.
I mean, it was, you know, it was barely anything. It was, you know, what they think he was going to say. You know, they were hanging on moments that, you know, we already knew the answer of.
Of course. Look, Alberto Gonzalez knew before he walked in the door, be vague, be nonspecific, you know, disavow torture, make it seem like it's a little quasi-religious. There was something about the way Arlen Specter, we're going to play a little bit of his question later on this morning, but something about the way he put his question to Gonzalez about, you know, do you support what happened at Abigail? It sounded like a confession.
Yeah.
You know, do you renounce the devil and all this? I mean, it was eerie to me. But Gonzalez, of course, answered in the least possible, with the least possible information that'll still get him confirmed.
Not only the least possible information, but the least possible personality. The guy's a dweeb. He's got no personality. He's a small man on the inside and the outside. You know, I'm always amazed at who the guys are that Bush surrounds himself with. Like, his real symbiotic relationships, his real loyalty is to, you know, Karl Rove and Alberto Gonzalez. Both of these guys are very, you know, sort of quiet, behind the scenes, geeky, you know, sort of, you know, not very, you know, masculine people that I think he really, you know,
you say he wears like lacy underpants?
Maybe. Bush is like a
fire truck.
Oops,
oh. Bush is a
fire truck and a lacy underpants.
Bush is like the symbolic penis.
For
several different small men, Gonzalez being one of them, Roe being the other. These guys have symbiotic relationships with this guy because Bush is incapable of having the intellectual vision that both of these relative, Roe's an evil genius, but Alberto Gonzalez is a guy that can justify Bush's legal mind, which he has none of. So they lock on to Bush as sort of this, literally, I think, a symbolic penis.
Well, I think when you look at Gonzalez, you got to look at some attorneys general who have made a difference in this country over time. Let's go back to Bobby Kennedy, who a lot of people forget was his brother's attorney general.
Charismatic, had guts.
Had guts, went after the whole civil rights thing in the early 1960s.
Went after the mob.
Yep, went after the mob. Nicholas Katzenbach. Another very solid attorney general under Lyndon Johnson. Ramsey Clark.
Right.
Look at where Ramsey Clark's been since he was there. These were attorneys general who had the stones to do what an attorney general is supposed to do, which is to look out for the interests of the people of the United States of America. Not to look to lock them all up, not to look to abrogate freedoms that we've all become used to having, but to make sure that those freedoms are protected. And guys like Bobby Kennedy, guys like Katzenbach, guys like Ramsey Clark, they did that job. I defy anybody to tell me that Alberto Gonzalez, the Alberto Gonzalez we heard running his yap yesterday, can hold a candle to those people.
Barely running his yap, too. I mean, just like, I respectfully disagree that there was some kind of permissive environment.
Yeah.
What is that? I mean, of course there was a permissive environment. Why are they so afraid? I wish, why is Rumsfeld even in power anymore? Why is he... Why is he in charge of anything? Why are any of these guys... All they do is protect themselves and protect each other, and it's disturbing. And I don't know why they didn't grill him even more. I mean, he clearly could have been... they could have asked him specifics about the memo. They really, they didn't really...
Didn't get it. But you know what? You hit on something very important when you mentioned his response. Well, I don't really think a permissive environment existed. Well, wait a minute. How do you think grunts like Charles Grainer, who, by the way, is going on trial while all this is happening, one of the guys who was charged in the Abu Ghraib prison abuses, how did people think he felt empowered to do what he did if there wasn't a permissive environment? If there was a by-the-book environment, how was it that Charles Grainer even got close enough to these people to harm him?
Well, he dismissed that by saying, they were just having a good time.
Yeah.
Just a couple
morally
of people.
Bankrupt people having fun.
That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous given the amount of incidents, the type of how long it went on for, that they all knew that was the place. Abu Ghraib was there. It was set up. It's just lies. And this guy's going to get passed either way. We're going to hear some sound from the Gonzalez hearings, and we're going to talk about Barbara Boxer later in the show. We've got some good guests coming up. We've got Christopher Dickey from Newsweek Magazine's Paris Bureau. He's a Middle East regional editor. We're going to talk a little about the Palestinian and Iraqi elections later in the show. Retired soldier Colonel David Hackworth is going to discuss Rumsfeld and why the hell that guy even has a job anymore. We'll be back after this. It's 14 past the hour on Air America Radio.
This is Congressman Barney Frank, and you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Nineteen past the hour, I am Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley there.
Yes, it is.
We're talking about Torquemada Gonzalez's confirmation hearings. We're going to hear a little bit of that. There's a lot of stuff going on. I can't wait to get into this, to the Rumsfeld stuff as to why, he's still in office. I can't wait to talk to a couple of our guests. We have Christopher Dickey from the Middle East regional editor of Newsweek to talk about Iraq and the Palestinian elections. We've got Colonel David Hackworth to talk about Rumsfeld later in the show. This guy should be out of work. 9 more American soldiers dead in Iraq. I wish, if they keep rationalizing this thing, if they keep saying things like, we knew this was going to happen towards the elections, we knew this was going to happen towards the turnover of the government. We knew this. You can't rationalize it after a certain point. It's not working. So let's hear, to switch gears now. Also, what is it with CNN? Now they've got a snuff film that they're going to run, every, 10 minutes. They finally got some footage of the actual tsunami wave hitting a human being, and now the guy's got to die 20 times a day?
it's
on CNN?
It's like the Ron Artest footage.
I just,
it's stuff that they just keep replaying because they think it that people want to see.
But it's like, it's weird, you know. They pull back from certain things. Like, they're not going to show, you know, the
dismembered
condomad's body parts, too many of the war dead. But because this tsunami is sort of an unbiased natural catastrophe, you know, they will just milk it for all it's worth. And, you know, you see this thing where the guy's standing on the beach and the waves just pull out. You know, all the surf pulls off of the beach and he's just standing there like, huh? And then, bam, this tsunami hits the guy, plows him over, and he's gone. It's a guy dying. I don't care if it's shot from a balcony or if it's shot from up close or it's a guy falling out of a tree or out of a building. That's what it is. Just because it's water and it's supposed to be fun doesn't mean that, you know, it makes it right. All right, so let's hear some of this from this is Senator Arlen Specter, you know, giving Gonzalez a mild probe.
Do you condemn the interrogators' techniques at Abu Ghraib shown on the widely publicized photographs?
Let me say, Senator, that as a human being, I am sickened and outraged by those photos. But as someone who may be head of the department, I obviously don't want to provide any kind of legal opinion as to whether or not that conduct might be criminal.
Yeah, because that would implicate me.
Huh?
What an idiot.
Huh?
I can't believe that guy. What was he as a human being? Hey, let's hear. I'd like to hear how it should have sounded, Chris. Can you play that for
me? Let me say, Senator, that as a human being, I am sickened and outraged by those photos. But as someone who may be head of the department, I obviously don't want to provide any kind of legal opinion as to whether or not that conduct might be criminal.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it was bad. When the arm falls on the ground, it's always hard to hear.
You know what that is, don't
what?
You?
What?
He's trying to say, I don't think this is torture. That's what he's trying to say, because
also,
torture is illegal.
Right, and he's also trying to say that, you know, if by any chance in the future somehow, you know, someone gets the guts to actually, you know, prosecute this thing with any effectiveness,
he'll
I don't want to
fired.
Be implicated. Well, I mean, exactly, but I don't want to be implicated in this because I condoned this.
Yeah.
And then he backtracked. He said that he didn't, quote, consider the Geneva Convention either obsolete or quaint, yet he did say that they were both obsolete and quaint in his memo.
Yes, he did.
What are some other greatest hits here? Like you were talking about, hey, why don't you address that Lindsey Graham thing? That was sort of surprising.
Well, yeah, Lindsey Graham seems like he's become a card-carrying member of Students for a Democratic Society or something. It's unbelievable. Here is a conservative congressman, then senator from South Carolina, the guy who led the impeachment charge on Bill Clinton, all-around conservative, I would have thought, Bush-type guy, and he's been critical of this administration on everything from the war in Iraq to his plans on Social Security, to the, you know, the suppression of victims' rights.
He's also a jag in the reserves, apparently. So, I mean, he's got another axe to grind. I mean, I'm sure that he has an understanding of this. You know, it really, you know, once you start to see the dichotomy between military cats, the military in general, and this administration, that this is not an administration that cares about the military. It's not an administration that, you know, is, you know, operating in empathy with what the military goes through. Because you're starting to see a real, you know, not just starting, but there's a real, you know, friction, a real chasm in between this administration and people who know what it is, what it means to be a soldier, what it is to be in the military, and what these guys are going through.
Now you've got national security advisors, Brett Scowcroft, some of these other guys who, Scowcroft worked for Bush's father.
Right.
And they're lining up, telling all of these different think tanks and organizations, you know what? This guy doesn't know what he's doing in Iraq, and Iraq is dangerously close to falling into civil war.
Well, that's where, you know, Lindsey Graham was coming from. You know, Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, said, quote, dramatically, he's talking about the torture.
Yeah.
And he said, quote, dramatically undermined the war effort, you know, by getting cute with the law. And, like, quote, I think you weaken yourself as a nation when you try to play cute and become more like your enemy instead of like who you want to be, end quote. Gonzalez objected to Graham's characterizations, noting the beheadings of Americans by terrorists. And he said, quote, we're nothing like our enemies, Senator, unquote. And then Graham came back and said, but we're not like who we want to be and who we have been. And that's the point I'm trying to make. When you start looking at torture statutes and you look at ways around the spirit of the law, you're losing the moral high ground. And I do believe that we've lost our way, end quote. And that was Lindsey Graham.
How come it wasn't a Democrat.
Leahy or Biden.
I mean, maybe they were just messing with him. But Graham got to the root of the problem here.
And I think Graham is speaking as a soldier to some degree.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's obviously speaking in terms of, you know, not just, you know, whether, you know, the torture was legal or illegal, but it's just that we should be better than this. You should be better than this. If you're going to be the Attorney General of our country, you know, God willing, you should be better than this. You know, we are not supposed to be some sort of, you know, arrogant bully who cares not for anyone else in the world. We should be an example to this world on the moral high ground on how to behave, you know, properly. We should be looked up to, not looked down at and feared.
You know, start applying that same logic, for example, to the conduct of elections in this country. You know what I'm saying?
It's absolutely
across the board. It is all of these different things taken together, and what you get is mediocrity. What you get is incompetence. What you get is people taking the path of least resistance, because that's what they let them get away with. This is, and again, they haven't gotten to Bernie Kerik yet. They haven't gotten to asking Alberto Gonzalez, gee, man, how is it that you vetted the guy, Bernie Kerik, who then had to withdraw his own nomination under a torrent of bad news that you couldn't get out of him in your hours of grilling?
Right. Who's pulling your strings, little man?
Yeah.
Why the hell did that happen? Why did you let that happen? Did, you know, did Bush give you the high sign? Exactly. Did he say, just do it, I don't care, you know, let's do it for Rudy?
Yeah.
You know, how did that go down? And now, they're, you know, it's like he didn't even construct the entire torture memo, but his name's on it. He's just like, it's amazing that this whole administration is sort of designed for blame dispersal. Like, half of these guys, not only do they have half a personality, but half of them do their own work. Everybody seems to be involved in it. It's never clear who the hell did what, you know?
Well, because that blurs the lines of accountability.
Absolutely. It's all about that.
Yeah, it's all about that. And see, the scary part is that there are guys in the military, not all of them, but there are guys in the military who are willing to go along, to get along. I hate to say this. Tommy Franks is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Guy who essentially traded in what he knew were problems with the invasion of Iraq, I guess, for that Medal of Honor he got not too long ago from President Bush. George Tenet, who's now severely criticized in the CIA report, who also got himself a Medal of Honor from our president.
Yeah.
He rewards this sort of thing. And what kind of example is this setting, not just to the world, but to our own people?
Yeah, who's next?
Who's
Rumsfeld? Going to get a medal?
But see, this is the same thing where a company can lose, you know, $500 million, but the CEO gets a, you know, $25-30 million bonus.
That's exactly what it is. This administration cares only about money and those people that manufacture money and how money runs through the world. They don't care about people at all.
No, now we got some information on the Palestinian elections. The Iraqi elections are coming up at the end of the month. We got information on our own elections when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. If you want to help tsunami victims and you haven't done so yet and you don't know where to go, go to morningsedition.com. We have some links that will help you out. It is a horrible, horrible thing over there, you know. And I'll tell you, I was watching CNN and I had a moment last night watching it where I really saw the full impact of just how big that thing was. You know, we'll talk about it later. But right now, Ray Ray just came in wearing a full slave gear. What was that with the nipple rings and the things?
That was that kind of slave.
That's what. Yeah.
Ooh, where's the train?
Yeah. I didn't. All right.
Okay. We're talking about 14th Street.
Alberto Gonzalez's Palm Pilot for today, 8 a.m. Wake up to special screaming alarm clock. Good morning. 8:15. Breakfast. Rice Krispies. Crackle. Pop. Pop. Crackle. Pop. Pop. 9 a.m. Get dressed. Blue suit. Red tie. And put on big boy shoes with 3-inch Cuban heels. 10 a.m. Feel like celebrating? Feel like celebrating. Call Dominatrix and tell her later I want the full Gitmo. 3 p.m. Find out which writers in the Latin press have been calling me Uncle Tomas. Or in Espanol, Tio Tomas, and have them tortured. 5 p.m., visit new Attorney General's office. Convert Ashcroft's prayer bench into stocks with leather restraints. 7 p.m., lay in large supply of chapstick for arduous winter Bush ass kissing.
10 p.m. Fall asleep on human pyramid bunk bed.
Ooh.
All right. Yeah. All right. This Sunday, Palestinians will vote in their first presidential election since 1996. Joining us by phone from Baghdad, Iraq, to discuss this important election is Chris Dickey. He's Newsweek Magazine's Middle East regional editor. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Very well. Sure. Give us a brief description of the main candidates and what this means for the region, this Palestinian election.
Well, really, there are only two candidates that anybody's ever heard of. The one who's expected to win by a large margin is Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, he's called. The longtime aide to Yasser Arafat, one of the exile leadership for many years of the PLO and Fatah. He was the chosen successor, if there was any successor. Very colorless guy before this election campaign. His approval ratings were in the single digits. But they've used their political muscle in Fatah and the PLO to basically drive everybody else out of the election campaign who might have been credible. And one other candidate is Mustafa Barghouti, who's an academic, a very respected man, not really a politician, has no real constituency. The only real rival there could have been was another Barghouti, not a close relative at all, Marwan Barghouti, who is in jail right now, charged with supporting terrorism against Israel.
Who's the most popular with the Palestinians, and do you expect any surprises in this election?
I think that there will be no surprises in this election. Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, will win the election by a substantial majority. And then we'll go into a situation where he will begin to try and negotiate with the Israelis for something like the deal that was on the table in 2000, when it was thrown away by Yasser Arafat and by Ariel Sharon and his maneuvering.
Chris Dickey, Abbas has been critical in the past of both the Israeli government and some of the excesses, I guess, of Palestinian militants. Now he seems to be, in recent public statements, making nice with those same militants, no?
Well, he wants the militants to be quiet. He wants them to calm down, but he doesn't have the resources to take them on militarily. He can't wipe them out. And more to the point, he can't wipe out the sentiments that they represent. The Palestinian people hate the Israeli occupation. They want to fight against it. They want to get rid of it. The question is, can you get rid of it by negotiating, or do you get rid of it by fighting, or do you try to do a little bit of both? Arafat tried both approaches and eventually in 2000 tried to do both and made an incredible mess of it. Mahmoud Abbas wants a situation where he can basically say, okay, we've calmed down. The bad guys are not putting down their guns, but they're not shooting at the Israelis either. Please do not try to assassinate them, Ariel Sharon, and we can begin to get some talks going.
Mm.
We'll see if that happens.
So you're in Baghdad now. You know, there's just been nothing but bad news out of that region. Nine American soldiers killed in the last 2 days. You know, hundreds of Iraqis seem to be being killed over the last few months. I want to know what you think. Is there any way that they can hold elections there in for real?
Sure, they're going to hold elections here. They're probably going to hold them on the date that was scheduled, January 30th. Are the elections going to be meaningful in terms of bringing peace to the country? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
The Sunni population of this country is more and more unified behind the resistance. That's a large chunk of the population. Not only is it a large chunk of the population, it's a large chunk of the influential population in this country. But the elections will almost certainly bring to power a constituent assembly and a national assembly that essentially are Shiite and Kurdish, who will then work out their problems and try to run the country with American assistance for the foreseeable future.
So now, in relation to the American deaths and military spokespeople always, you know, sort of saying that, you know, there's going to be more violence as we get towards the election, and then, you know, they use this excuse also when they were changing the hands of the government. I mean, this violence
Look. What the administration wants you to do is change the channel as soon as the deadline passes. That's why President Bush landed on an aircraft carrier on May 1st, 2003. That mission accomplished, you can change the channel.
Right.
That's when Saddam was captured. Hey, we got him. You can change the channel. Transfer of sovereignty. Hey, the Iraqis are in control now. Blame them for everything. Change the channel. Now it's elections. Change the channel. And everybody does change the channel. Hell, people have tuned this war out. All the soldiers here know it. Everybody understands that. And the Bush administration certainly understands it. So this is another signal to the American people. You can forget about the soldiers dying over here. It's not really a big deal. We're staying the course. Everything will be okay. Well, it isn't going to be okay. This place is a really big mess. There are almost 1,500 Americans have died here so far. If we stay at the current rate of American losses, we will have killed more Americans here than were killed on September 11th in about 20 months from now.
Chris, again,
so
it's
not a good thing.
Are the American troops aware of the fact that now they're talking about making that temporary increase of 30,000 permanent? If so, what kind of effect is that having on American troops?
All they talk to each other about is when they're going to get the hell out of here or out of the service. I mean, look, these are brave guys. They're doing their duty. They volunteered. They signed up. Not only guys, but also women. They're very good soldiers, American soldiers. But when they signed up in the reserves, and most of them are reservists and guardsmen, they didn't sign up for this kind of duty year after year after year. I mean, I was talking to one master sergeant today, for instance, who hasn't been back to his civilian job in 3 years.
Wow.
I don't know when he will get back to it.
That's unbelievable.
So I think there's a lot of strain on people here. I think they're holding up remarkably well under the circumstances. They're very brave people in a very difficult situation. It's not their fault. And I think, if I could just say this, one of the big mistakes that was made during the Vietnam War, which I'm old enough to remember, is the way people blame the soldiers for the war. There's no blaming these guys for this war. The people to blame are in the White House and in Congress and in the Defense Department.
Powerful words. Chris Dickey, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris.
Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Okay. That was Chris Dickey, Newsweek Magazine's Middle East Regional Editor. Wow. You know, it's like I tend to disagree a little bit in the sense that, you know, when I saw that 9 American soldiers were killed last night for you know, it just keeps hitting me. And last night I just had this, you know, deep feeling that there's no way that Americans of any ilk could dismiss this war, that it's getting to that point. And it has been for months from where I'm sitting since the beginning of it. You know, as far as whether it was right or wrong, you know, it was the wrong war to be in. But now the casualties have got to be having an effect even on people that think they support this war.
Bush has moved on. That's the long and the short of it. He's on Social Security. He's on all of these other things. And the war for him, and because the media covers him so closely, the media is not focusing on the war. The media is not focusing on the deaths. They're not even. They're certainly not focusing on Iraqi deaths.
It's horrible. We'll be back. We're going to talk about Barbara Boxer making a stand. We're going to talk about voter suppression tactics going back all the way to the 60s in a very dark, horrendous story. 43 past the hour on Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Courtesy of Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Good morning, people. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Happy to be here.
Me too.
Hey, you know what day it is, Mark? It's Friday.
Ah.
Which means it is time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
Oh, yeah. Mark Maron, our president, is running around the country talking about what he calls frivolous lawsuits and the crisis they've caused.
Mm-hmm.
He's full of crap, of course.
Yes.
But every now and then, there are lawsuits brought by people seeking a little more than 15 minutes of fame and a quick payoff. So it is with this week's dog. His name is Austin Aitken, a man from Cleveland with way too much time on his hands. He's filed suit in federal court alleging the TV show Fear Factor made him sick. Makes me sick, too, but in his case, $2.5 million worth of sick. Specifically, it was a segment where contestants ate dead rats.
Oh, I miss him.
Better dead rats than live rats. Now, why anybody watches a gross-out show like Fear Factor is absolutely beyond me. But if Austin Aitken wasn't happy with what was on his TV screen, he had the same option as millions of other Americans. Yo, stupid! Change the channel, okay? Aitken said the rat fest made his blood pressure rise so high, he became dizzy and hit his head trying to run away from his TV screen. Yet if you really want to know where this guy is coming from, consider this. When asked for an interview by Reuters, Austin Aitken said he wouldn't do one unless he got paid for it. What, are you trying to save up to pay for those court costs you're running up with this nonsensical lawsuit?
Yeah.
Austin Aitken, you are hands down the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week.
Ooh!
And I guess he's not going to call us because, you know, he'll only do it for money.
For money, yeah.
Punk. Yeah, I'll say. So let's see. Yeah, this is some heavy stuff, Riley. In Mississippi, prosecutors convened a grand jury Thursday to begin the unfinished business of getting into the 1964 slayings of the three voter registration volunteers. These were voter registration volunteers. Their names were
Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner.
James Cheney, Andrew Goodman, Michael Schwerner. And now, see, this is like it's an arc from then to what we're dealing with now. This was a voter suppression tactic. These guys were killed for trying to register black voters in the segregated South.
They were murdered by terrorists.
Yes.
For years, the names Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner rang throughout black communities across America and struck fear into the hearts of many people. Let me put this in context.
Mm-hmm.
A year before Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner were killed, Martin Luther King gave his historic I Have a Dream speech in Washington, D.C. That same year, 1963, which happens to also be the year John Kennedy was killed,
I was born.
Medgar Evers
mm-hmm.
was also killed in Mississippi trying to register black voters. The following summer, in part as a response to Medgar Evers' murder, a group of activists from across the country decided to organize a Freedom Summer, where they would send large groups of integrated teams of people, young people mainly, college students, into the South to help educate and register black voters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1964, when the Klan and others who were racially opposed to black people having the vote, or much less exercising, when they got wind of this, among their tactics was to try to burn the buses that these Freedom Riders were on. They also tried, they blew up the 16th Street Church in Birmingham, Alabama, the one where four little girls were killed. This was all about suppressing the black vote.
Still going on today.
Still going on today. Well, Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner were on a back road in Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
and they were snatched off that back road at gunpoint by Klansmen and brutally murdered.
See,
brutally.
And these guys were actually, you know, they were Klansmen, but they were henchmen for the dominating ideological movement at the time.
Yes, and they were also henchmen, by the way, and James Cheney's brother says this and has continued to say it throughout the years. They were also henchmen for a very wealthy group of white people that didn't want to see the status quo in the South change.
Sound familiar? So it wasn't the dominant ideology of the culture. I made a mistake in saying that. It was just me trying to put something together in my head off the cuff. And it really was, you know, the resistance to the dominant ideology of the culture.
Yeah.
The culture was changing.
The culture was changing, and people wanted to stop that change. 19 people were indicted on federal charges. They were seven were convicted on federal civil rights violations in 1967, sentenced to prison terms ranging from 3 to 10 years. Now, you may ask yourself, Mark, well, then what's all the fuss about now? The fact is the state of Mississippi for 40 years never brought a single murder charge against any of the people indicted, convicted, exonerated, hung juried, whatever. Now, in the year 2004, 40 years, actually, in 2005, 40, well, going on 41 years after these men were killed, these young men were killed for doing nothing more than trying to get people to vote.
Right. And this guy, Billy Wayne Posey, one of the accused, said, quote, after 40 years to come back and do something like this is ridiculous, like a nightmare, end quote. Well, it's about time he paid the price on this level, you know, and this is the same way they talk now. You know, this is ridiculous. This is stupid. This is the past.
Yeah.
It's the same tone that somebody like Debbie Price, the Republican from Ohio, you know, dismissing the arguments against, you know, to elevate the issue of voter fraud, in the sense that black votes are still suppressed now. All it takes now is to just understaff the place, put one machine in a community of 500,000 people. However, you know, the tactics are just different, but this is exactly the same, you know, ideological momentum that killed these three guys.
The tactics have changed. Debbie Price is a Republican congresswoman, I believe, from Ohio, okay, who opposed the very idea that 40 years after these three men were killed, the Congress of the United States should spend a measly 4 hours discussing the issue of making voting secure for every American.
Yeah. See, you know, it's interesting that, you know, they still, you know, when I, you know, initially when we were talking about this issue, is that one thing
I didn't want to get involved with myself was going over, you know, hypotheticals, was going over math problems, was, you know, moving numbers around, you know, exit polls, machines, whether machines were rigged or what. What we do know, because that stuff, there's no end to that. There's no way to prove any of that. What we do know is that these machines are not reliable. The machine companies are owned by Republican lobbyists for the most part. They're owned by, you know, partisan people, and that there was an active strategy to suppress the black vote again.
Yeah.
And that is provable.
Orchestrated by a black guy, for God's sake. That's the scary part. The Secretary of State, Kenneth Blackwell, was, at the same time he was supervising the elections in the state of Ohio, ran the Bush-Kerry campaign in the same state.
Mm-hmm.
And it's perfectly legal. Nobody's saying he did anything illegal. But in terms of a question of the legacy of these three guys and what they died for, he did plenty wrong.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. And after, when we come back, we're going to hear some sound from Barbara Boxer. We're going to hear a beautiful piece of sound from Stephanie Tubbs Jones,
friend of the room,
who we've talked to a few times before.
Yeah.
She's just great, you know. And Barbara Boxer was really you got to love her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just in terms of like I'm just amazed that none of these other idiots, you know, realize that they had nothing to lose and everything to gain from this, instigating this conversation.
And ladies and gentlemen, please, when you read the papers today, ignore all of that stuff about her being ultra-liberal and being from a state full of wackos and all the rest of that foolishness.
I couldn't believe that Associated Press. We're going to get into that in a minute. The Associated Press is not supposed to have that kind of stuff on there. Here's the liberal agenda from the Barbara Streisand compound. One, for challenging Ohio's vote, send Barbara Boxer an extra-large jockstrap. Nice work, stud. Some people are getting mad at that one, too. Demand that the new Michael Keaton movie, White Noise, be renamed Multicultural Noise. 3, boycott the use of $20 bills to protest slave-owning President Andrew Jackson. 4, $5 bills with Lincoln's face work just as well. 4, to raise public consciousness about stem cell research, get Hollywood producers to create new show, Stem Cell Research, Special Victims Unit. 5, today's phrase just dropping in the conversation. You think that was a real hearing yesterday? Wake up, people. You can do anything with CGI, man. Don't you get it? Gonzalez is just a bunch of dots in a computer, man. Wake up, sheeple. So what do we got coming up there, man?
Well, hey, we're going to talk some more about 1964. We're going to talk about Barbara Boxer and her standing up. You got the Dream Diary. We got a whole bunch of stuff coming up only here on Air America Radio.
And you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Good morning, insomniacs. Good morning, shut-ins. Good morning to you, the self-employed. Good morning to all you people that feel a little bit better that Barbara Boxer stood up yesterday in the halls of the Senate.
I guess
it would be.
Yeah.
I am very, very excited about that, very proud of her. We're going to get into that in just a second. I would like to say a couple of corrections I need to make for myself from earlier this week. Not that big of a deal, but I said that H&M was a British company, not a British company, Swedish company. Big deal, right?
Brits, Swedes, aren't they the same?
Well, you ever been to H&M? Great.
No, I've never been there.
Disposable clothing.
Really?
it's almost like, I guess now that I know it's Swedish, it's almost like the IKEA of clothes places.
Really?
Yeah, they got pretty fashionable stuff that's really cheap.
Really cheap.
Yeah. I don't know why. Why do I end up doing advertisements for places that don't even kick me back? Nothing.
Really?
I get nothing.
Not even a disposable sweater.
Well, no, I mean, you get stuff. I mean, my wife buys more stuff than I do, but I got a scarf there for like $3, and it's going to last a while.
Really?
I love finding stuff that'll last. I'm like a freak like that. You know what I'm looking forward to more than anything this week? I'll be honest with you. You want to know what I'm looking forward to?
Tell me.
I have this pair of desert boots, black desert boots, Clark's desert boots that I've had for years.
Okay.
Right? And you know the
Clark's are great kicks.
Yeah, but you know the soles on the Wildebeest and the desert boot, they're that rubber composite sole that looks like it's been splattered on there, like it looks like rubber cement almost.
Yeah.
You can't just get those resoled. You got to, resoling places don't do that. It takes a machine process. So I found a place that does it, and I sent them out into the mail. And I'm just, I'm literally sitting around going, man, I can't wait to see those souls.
Did you have to go back? I mean, did you have to send them back to Clark's in England?
They don't do that anymore.
Oh,
they
used to. Clark doesn't do it.
They used to. They used to get resold their own shoes. But no, you got, I found this other place. It's resold.
Cheaper to buy new ones.
It is probably, but you get so attached, and I'm so into doing that. Like, you know, when you have something that you love and it's old, it's like, how can I make it? You don't want to take out, you know, the natural authenticity and integrity of the thing. You don't want to remake it new, but you want to be able to still have those shoes. So I'm going to have them, Mark.
You're going to have them. Look, if you ever want to get a pair of Clarks, see me, because I can tell you where the best place to get them is.
You know a guy with a truck?
No, man. Huh? It's an actual mall, and I hate malls. So,
like an outlet mall?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. I just bought three pairs of Desert Boots in different colors. I got these. I got these olive ones.
Okay.
These ones here, and I got some brown ones. Oh, no, I only bought two. I like Desert Boots because if you wear them long enough, they start to look like elf shoes. They do. They get all soft and pointy. In the middle of the night, what else is going on? You know, I got the three cats, and there's a cat outside. I don't know when I became cat crisis guy.
A cat outside?
Well,
now?
No, there's a few out there. You know, the mother's still out there, right?
Word travels about you, huh?
Well, I've been feeding one outside. I thought it was the mother. Then I saw some, you know, black muddy cat eating the food I'm giving for the mother of the kittens that I have out of respect for her family, you know. And then, like, I'm just sitting there, Kayla, I'm sitting at home, and you know what I hear outside? I hear exactly that. Right? So, like, if you heard that, would you just say, like, I guess there's a problem out there, right? I'm naked. And I hear this. I'm about to go to bed. I'm like, I have to go save something. I'm like, when did I become cat rescue guy? I'm out there in the middle of the night in my bathrobe trying to figure out where cats are fighting in the dark behind
my
building.
Oh, when did I behind your building?
Yeah, I got to get up. I got to walk down two floors. I'm outside. It's cold. I'm in my bathrobe going, come here. What's going on out here? What's going on?
Ooh.
And I got
but
back
you never
there.
Found him.
Of course not. And it went on. But I think it was the mother because one of my cats was like, meow.
Oh,
you know, like, I wonder if they have that memory.
Do you
anyway,
not know
this is a, you know, yeah, I think that's what it was. But let's get into more important things here. You know, yesterday, an amazing thing happened, you know, thanks to you people who helped mobilize, you know, Barbara Boxer and, you know, in writing her and writing your senators, that there was an active discussion among the Democratic members of the Senate, obviously an active discussion among whoever is willing to have the discussion, not John Kerry, who was not even in the country.
No, he was in Baghdad.
You know, it's just like, you know, I'm not going to, you know, get this stuck in my craw, but I still don't understand why they didn't all stand up, whoever was there, because Barbara Boxer did. It was the right thing to do. You know, we were talking today just before the break there about Mississippi prosecutors. This has just happened yesterday, too, convened a grand jury. This was actually on Thursday. I apologize. That was yesterday, so it was yesterday. To take up one of the last pieces of unfinished business from the civil rights era, the 1964 slayings of three voter registration volunteers. These guys, James Chaney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Schwerner, were killed for doing exactly. This is voter suppression. This is what voter suppression looked like in the segregated South in 1964.
I had the privilege of speaking to Andrew Goodman's mother, Carolyn Goodman, who has been waging a lonely battle. Along with Merle Evers Williams, who was the woman who was Megar Evers' wife,
right,
to try and get these cases adjudicated. This has been over a generation and a half it's taken to finally get the state of Mississippi. The feds tried they tried 19 people. Seven were convicted. They went to jail for 3 to 10 years. But the state of Mississippi refused to indict anyone, refused to bring anyone to trial on murder charges after Chaney, Goodman, and Schwerner were waylaid off of Mississippi Road back in 1964. And by the way, this was dramatized in the 1988 movie Mississippi Burn.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
But you said it's not quite right.
It's not quite right, but I mean it brought this case, you know, 30 years after the fact almost, back to people's consciousness.
Right.
Because, you know, a lot of people had forgotten what happened.
Well, listen to the real guy, Billy Wayne Posey. This is what he said the other day. He said, quote, after 40 years, this is a guy, one of the accused, one of the convictors, who I'm assuming did jail time. Quote, after 40 years, to come back and do something like this is ridiculous. Like a nightmare. Hear the language that this guy is the victim? This guy is the victim? This is ridiculous? This is a nightmare? Where's justice? This is justice. It's like people dismissing real little evidence. It's like we'll hear later from Debbie Price, a representative from Ohio, a Republican, dismissing real evidence of voter suppression. This isn't hypothetical math problems. This isn't like, you know, we think the machines were rigged. This is real, tangible evidence of voter fraud and suppression of the black vote, and she dismisses it as well. We, you know, it's one thing to say that, you know, math is questionable. It's another thing to have proof that the black vote was suppressed in Ohio, and also to dismiss justice being finally carried out in a case where three people were killed trying to register black voters as ridiculous and a nightmare. This is a Republican game that's been played since the beginning, apparently.
This is about justice. As Carolyn Goodman, who is now 89 years old, says, I am not looking for revenge. I'm looking for justice. Her son was snatched from her. He was 23, 24 years old, a kid, and was killed, taken out, and brutally murdered. Then, you know, this guy Posey talks about a nightmare. What kind of nightmare does he think it was for those three individuals to be, you know, to know at some point that they were going to be killed?
Well, let's talk about the new nightmare when we come back. We'll hear from Stephanie Tubbs Jones, you know, standing up and reaching out. And then Barbara Boxer after that coming to her side and taking up her back. So that's going to happen right after this. It's 14 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, your daily wake-up call to arms on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Apparently, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, got into the board and pulled a Bruce song up.
Oh, was that what that was? I thought John Landau came by or something. What's going on?
I went to therapy yesterday, and I got to say I did have a mild breakthrough. You know,
really?
If this were a different kind of show, I'd probably talk about it.
He emptied the vase, didn't he?
I don't know what happened, but I've been very frustrated over the last few months, just sort of like, you know, the same stuff. I'm getting up too early. I'm cranky, and my wife is living across the country. What do you want from me? You know, that was it. You know, and you hit a wall in therapy. I don't know if you ever did that kind of thing.
No.
All right. Mr. Normal, Mr. Got It Together.
I try to be Mr. No, you know what? I did go to therapy once. My mother, when I was like maybe 15, 16 mm-hmm. years old. And my mother thought I was nuts. So she took me to this guy.
Yeah.
We sat up talking for a while. It was the last I bothered with.
Yeah, I went once because of that reason as well when I was a kid. But I'll be honest with you. Some people are like, who needs it? It's stupid, whatever. But, you know, honestly, I got to tell you, over the years, it has helped me immeasurably. If you know what's eating you, you know, to get another perspective is certainly a worthwhile thing to do. Because if you're a little nutty, who the hell are you to judge yourself? So, on some level.
I just slap myself around.
All right.
It works for me.
I do that, too. You know, and the problem with that is you start to enjoy it, and then you got a problem. But, anyways, we'll get into that later. This is my dream diary from last night. I walk into some kind of abandoned bull ring, and there in the center is my dead cat, Butch. She's wearing a sparkling Matador's outfit and is circling a man tied to a chair. It's Alberto Gonzalez, who has a rose in his teeth and a wild look in his eye. Butch circles him with a cape and dagger and says, "So, my little toro, it is a moment of truth, yes?" I say, "Butch, what are you doing?" Butch says, "Mark Maron, here sits the stuffed doughy burrito that would condone the torture of others. I would like to know what such a man is made of, wouldn't you?" Butch takes a razor-sharp claw and runs it slowly along Gonzalez's inner thigh. Gonzalez bites down on the rose and whimpers. Butch sneers, "His cojones seem tiny, so much smaller than his mouth. Those sad little dumplings would never help you in Guantanamo." I said, "Butch, let him go, please. We'll go somewhere you can have filthy cat sex." Instead, Butch tore Gonzalez's shirt open and ran a claw slowly along his chest. Butch says, "Mira, this is not the bragging heart of a bull. This is the squeaking heart of a teat mouse. Do you hear it? It says, 'I am Bush's toilet paper. I wipe Gringo's bottom.'" I say, "Butch, you made your point, man. Let him go already." But she just ignored me and ran a claw slowly across the throat. Butch hisses, "I could slice you open like a piñata, gordita. But what would come out? The blood of a man or the chili con carne of a coward?" Finally, I step in. I say, all right, you're done. Let's go. Let him go." Butch took off her Matador hat and bowed deeply to me. "And so I shall, Mark Maron, and so I shall." With a swipe of her claws, Butch tore his ropes. She says to Gonzalez, "Now run, you sad little toro. Run for your life."
The last thing I saw was Butch and 100 cats chasing Alberto Gonzalez through the streets of Pamplona. Hola, mi gato. Oh, wait. Oh, ole, mi gato, I say, my eyes filling with tears. Vaya con Dios. That's some dream, isn't it?
Hey.
I wake up, okay, and my bed was filled with sopapillas.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Now, we want to apologize to any of our Mexican-American listeners who may have been offended by the preceding bit.
Yeah. But it was Butch.
Or French listeners, too, by the way.
It wasn't me. Can I write that off as Butch doing it? You know, it's so weird. I got this big board here full of sounds and things, and then I go to look for the sound that I want. I don't prepare efficiently, Mark, sometimes.
Sometimes I get a
sound in my head. I'm like, I'm going to use that sound. And I'm like, oh, I forgot to look where it was. And I'm like, sound. Oh, no. Buttons.
Yeah, right. We're not on TV, folks. Mark Maron had his finger, like, floating over this
floating
board.
Over the magic board.
He's trying to find what he's looking for.
I got it. That's what I wanted when I said that. Here, wait. Maybe they'll still have some. Ole, mi gato. I saw my eyes filling with tears. I say, my eyes filling with tears. Vaya con Dios. See, it would have been great if I'd done it at the right time, right?
Hey.
That's why
we got do-overs here on the Morning Sedition.
Sure, no one heard that. There were people just tuning in. They were like, what was the rest of that
bit?
All right, let's start over. I woke up and... All right. Anyway, thanks, Chris. So let's get back into this. Stephanie Tubbs Jones stands up and says this. Congressman Stephanie Tubbs Jones from Ohio,
friend of the room.
You know, in our the broad sweep of what we can prove about Ohio, really without a doubt, is that there was voter suppression, there was voter fraud in that way, and that the black vote was suppressed by understaffing voting places and by putting not the right number of machines, very few machines, by making it difficult for black voters to vote by some push calling schemes.
They had a whole bunch of schemes. They had a whole bunch of what Don King, another son of Ohio, would call trickeration.
Yes,
on the part of.
So let's hear Stephanie Tubbs Jones yesterday.
I raise these objections because I am convinced that we, as a body, must conduct a formal and legitimate debate about election irregularities. I raise these objections to debate the process and protect the true will of the people.
That was great.
There you go.
And now she needed one senator to stand up and take her. What is the protocol language? I'm bad with language. So she needed a senator to support her to get the debate to occur. That's the official. Now Mark, that the last time the two chambers were forced to interrupt their joint vote counting session and meet separately was in January 1969, when a quote unquote faithless North Carolina elector designated for Richard Nixon voted instead for independent George Wallace.
Yeah.
How do you like that? And then, that alongside, this was like in 1969, okay? So this is the same mentality that killed these three guys.
Yeah.
Who were registering black voters in Mississippi, 1964, they were killed. And that is just starting to see some light now. They're going to reopen the grand jury trial. Now, whether anything happens or not, just the indication.
One guy's already been arrested.
Right.
One guy.
Now, recently.
Now, yesterday.
Oh, good.
One guy has been arrested. That's that guy, Killeen.
Okay.
Okay, now, the thing is, there may be, because there's still more grand jury testimony happening, there may be the possibility that other people will be indicted and arrested. This time on state murder charges.
But this took 40 years to see the light of day. So, maybe in, 2059, someone will say that,
boxes were rigged.
Yeah, but hopefully they'll say that. But more likely, in a sadder way, they'll say maybe there was some suppression of the black vote in Ohio in 2004.
Oh, yeah, we just love to stand out at 2 o'clock in the morning waiting to vote, folks.
So Barbara Boxer gets Stephanie Tubbs Jones back. Let's hear that. Number four, Chris.
Franklin County officials reduced the number of electronic voting machines in downtown precincts while adding them in the suburbs. This also led to very long lines. In Cleveland, why were there thousands of provisional ballots disqualified after poll workers gave faulty instructions to the voters? Because of these and many other examples, all documented in the press. I am joining with Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones to cast the light of truth on a flawed system which must be fixed now. Not in years from now, but now.
There you go.
So not unlike Billy Wayne Posey, who after 40 years of sitting on his duff thinking everything was okay after he did a little jail time in this case in Mississippi, he said, after 40 years to come back and do something like this is ridiculous. We have Debbie Price, a Republican congresswoman from Ohio, saying something similar, and we'll hear that after the break.
Yeah, you know, with Boxer standing up, with Tubbs Jones standing up, maybe we need more women like them in Congress.
That's for sure. We need someone with some nads in Congress.
Now, we got coming up Rapture Watch, and we've also got a movie review from a certain Dr. Marin.
Oh, yeah.
When we come back here on Air America Radio.
Go. 34 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yes.
Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. You know, if the shoe was on the other foot here, I wonder what these Republicans would do. If there was any indication by what they would do, you know, in terms of how they're handling the Washington gubernatorial race.
Washington State, yeah, they're going crazy. They've had a recount. The guy, the Democrat won. The guy, I believe it was a woman.
Yeah, the woman.
The woman won. And, it was narrow. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very close. But then so was Florida.
Right, but, you know, now they're just sort of like, we want another recount. Like, you know, if you keep getting, and they want another vote is what they want, not a recount.
The Ukraine,
they recounted it, like,
right,
twice,
yeah.
But they want a whole other vote because a Republican can't handle losing. And that was straight out losing. And, of course, if you had another vote, you could go out and find, you could bust people in, for God's sakes. You could pay people to come vote for you if you had another vote.
It's amazing to see how people act when their ox is being gored.
Yeah, well, listen to this. This is Debbie Price, a Republican congresswoman from Ohio, in response to Barbara Boxer and Stephanie Tubbs Jones.
Americans, don't be deceived. Their intention in this whole process is merely to sow doubts and undermine public confidence in the electoral system itself. Their challenges to the legitimacy of this election are no more than another exercise in their party's primary strategy to obstruct, to divide, and to destroy.
You know, it's like, I don't know how they got that clean a recording. I think that was taken off of C-SPAN. I don't know where they got that, because we had a guy in there for our show recording the same event. And this is definitely, there is certainly a conservative biased media, because, you know, this is the sound we got back from. He was having some problems, but it sounded
slight difference.
Yeah, can we hear our guy's sound?
Americans, don't be deceived. Their intention in this whole process is merely to sow doubts and undermine public confidence in the electoral system itself. Their challenges to the legitimacy of this election are no more than another exercise in their party's primary strategy to obstruct, to divide, and to destroy.
I don't think we should use that correspondent anymore. Clearly he had something for lunch before. Oh, did we just do all that? We did. I'm proud. I'm proud of this show.
But
did
you know,
I say that?
As Congresswoman Price said, the obstruction was removed.
I just, you know, the tone, man, the condescending tone, the arrogance, the complete lack of humility, you know, that is something that this administration has, you know, plenty of.
Well, these are people who are feeling their oats. These are people who feel now that they run the country. And by inference, by the way, they rule the world, because this is the most powerful country in the world.
And you've got George Bush Sr. out on the road, literally hard selling the idea that Americans are compassionate. Like, he can't even keep his dumb old mouth shut about what an amazing thing it is that America's out there helping people. Like, you know, it's one thing to have the humility to just do it. Just go and do it. Just go help. Don't get on TV and says, isn't this just a great example of how, great Americans, It was disdainful to me, and I'm still pissed off at Bill Clinton for aligning himself with the Bushes, even if it is a humanitarian gesture. He could have done it on his own. He could have went out as an American diplomat on his own and did the same thing, and then I would have been fine with that. I would have been proud of him. But I don't believe this bipartisan crap. I don't think he owes those idiots anything. You know, those guys represent the ideological momentum that put it, up his,
exactly
his
what
for
said,
8 years, for more than that. And
yeah.
It repels me to see the three of them stand there, that they were going to use the heart of our guy, that they were going to say, we need to rent Clinton's heart because he's the only guy that has a little of it. And we're going to co-opt him and use him for, I don't care what you say out there. I'm pissed off about that. Could have done it on its own.
Look, I think you're right to be pissed off about it. And the sad thing about what Bush Sr. is doing is that he's reinforcing this idea that America draws any kind of strength whatsoever by simply looking in the mirror and telling ourselves how wonderful we are.
Yeah. And now, there's some flack. I heard cranky old Lou Dobbs on CNN last night getting all worked up about how the United Nations is stepping up and they're going to be, leading the relief effort. That's what they're supposed to do.
Who does he want?
That's what the United Nations is for. He's like, we should have taken the primary role. What? Well, you know what? We should work with them. This is one of those situations where the least that these dummies can do is align themselves with the United Nations with something they do well.
Look, if they wanted to take the primary role, Lou, then Bush should have came up with $1 billion the day after the tsunami hit, which was Monday, December 27th. All he had to do was jump up and say, okay, we're the United States, we're the leader, here's our billion, where's yours?
Well, it's like amazing, they sent these military, the military's doing a great job.
They are doing a great job.
And they sent these big vessels out there that brought all these machines that turn salt water into to drinking water, and they're operating two, many of them. I saw a report on it, and the truth of the matter is that, we don't have machines that do the same thing in terms of, making money out of dirt. Now this guy is bankrupting our country with a war that shouldn't be being fought, and the only solutions that he has around that is to deplete retiring people of their money, mm-hmm. By putting it on gambling with it, or by putting caps on tort reform, by restricting victims' rights. This is how he's going to bolster the economy. The truth of the matter is like he can pledge all he wants, but on some level, I know we've got a lot of money, but he can just make up numbers all he wants. But it's like on some level, where's all this money coming from? They should just,
nobody knows. Mark, the thing that I find contradictory in all this is that if you're talking about people who are religious folks,
yeah.
It would seem to me that tsunami would have made them rethink their entire strategy about waging war, about invading another country. When Mother Nature can inflict this level of damage on humankind in this short a period of time, why would we as a country be out inflicting damage on other people?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
I would imagine that a lot of the fanatical, more narrow-minded, more, ideologically morally corrupt of the, Christian ideologues. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about, again, I'm talking about fanatics. I'm talking about extremism. I'm not talking about all Christians. I'm talking about people that probably saw this as, God's way of purging Muslims from the world.
Yeah, yeah. Which is sick, by the way.
Of course it's sick. The Bible's book of Revelation pretends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, which is one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Janesville, Wisconsin. Your Grace.
Take notice, thou unchaste whores of God. Shintasa ushunda tampa. Heed my heedings, thy toad-eating sons of Stuval, Mozak, Hosea, and Carl. Mandada ba kasa pata pata. Listen closely, ye owners of Garden of Eden, natural food products. Your name is not only heretical, it's a stupid pun. Jesus doesn't care about 15 varieties of corn chips. He just wants one that won't fall apart in his friggin' clam dip. Christ wanted sea salt and love in his mango salsa. He would have married Dom DeLuise. Shuntapa wubba wubba. Now you may recall, 3 Hebdo modules ago, I told you about a 120-year-old tortoise and a baby hippo becoming inseparable companions at the Nairobi Zoo. where they engaged in all sorts of unnatural tortoise on hippo action. The week after that, I spake of a dog in Montana who was snatched up by a bald eagle and then showed up safe 3 days later with his little doggy sweater on backwards. And the week after that, I told you how Fox's Who's Your Daddy got the lowest ratings in its time slot. What in the name of our holy savior is the matter with you people? Can't stand the sight of a middle-aged bald guy wearing a man girdle? That show could have been my big break. Anyway, if you're like me, you probably just heard about that big earthquake in South Asia that did all that damage and stuff. But did you also know that it caused the planet to wobble off its axis, permanently accelerating Earth's rotation, thereby shortening the length of the average day? So saith the learned scientists at NASA, which, according to my research, stands for Nerds Admiring Satan's Anus. Either that or the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. But I'm going with Nerds Admiring Satan's Anus myself. Little catch here. What does all this mean, you hebetudinous rubbers of smooth skin parts? Well, Jesus is coming sooner than we thought. In a shorter day means less time I have to wait to be raptured up to heaven, where I'll sit at the throne of Jesus and his pet monkey, Nibbles. For it was prophesied in Revelation 16 tons, and what do you get? And I quote, "And one-third of everything was destroyed, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place, causing days to become shorter, and Republicans to reduce the minimum wage." End quote. And so your destruction draweth nigh, sinners. So nigh, it's nigher than nigh. In fact, it's not even nigh anymore. It's like 1/8 nigh, or... Tsunamis, mass death, it's all part of God's great plan to get here faster. Of course, if he really wanted to arrive sooner, I suppose he could just, you know, arrive sooner. But anyway, who am I to complain? It's all good, all good. I'm with it, yeah. Don't want to second guess our leader. Way to go, Jesus. So until next time, if there is a next time, keep on fornicating, fornicators, and we'll keep a light on for you. In hell.
No, what is that, Colonel? Is that speaking in tongues?
Or? I'm channeling the word of God in another language that is you cannot decipher it. Because you are not one of the... Pray with me, Mark.
Yeah, well, okay.
Pray with me. We're going to pray on the streets. We'll pray in the toilets.
Okay.
I'm going to run you ragged, boy.
All right, we'll get right on that, and we'll be back in a minute. It's 45 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Because two Marks are better than one. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yeah, back here at 51 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition. It's Friday. It's the weekend. It's a good time to settle down in a comfortable theater for a good movie. Morning Sedition has decided to do what every other lazy media outlet does and feature a regular movie reviewer. The only difference being, the only difference between us and everyone else is that our reviewer doesn't know he's reviewing movies for us. And he's my dad. And I don't know how many times I can do this before he's on to it. I called him yesterday. He's going to get nervous every time he talks to me now. But this is the second installment. This might be able to try and keep it up, but I'm going to have to keep hitting him from the flank. So here's the phone conversation I had with my dad yesterday. And I secretly taped it. It's a segment we like to call Dr. Maron's Movies.
Hello.
Hey, Dad.
How you doing, man?
Good. How you doing? What are you doing?
Sitting here waiting for my car to be repaired.
What's going on with the car?
Oh, the brakes aren't working just right.
So what, are you just sitting there doing nothing now?
Yeah, I'm sitting here waiting for the shuttle to take me home.
Did you go see Spanglish or what?
I never saw Spanglish.
What about that? Did you see the Ocean's 12?
No, I rejected that one. I still remember Ocean's 11. It was good. And if you see it, Ocean's 11, I thought it was fair. So I haven't seen Ocean's 12. Have you?
No, I wouldn't go see it. I saw The Aviator.
Yeah, I like that.
That was good, right?
Yeah, it's a good summary of his life. I mean, it was really well done, I thought, and it moved quickly.
Yeah.
It was an interesting story.
I was worried that Leonardo wouldn't be able to pull it off, but I think he did.
I think he did. Well, he did good in that Catch Me If You Can, remember, and Titanic. He's a good young actor, and he can move.
Did you see Closer?
I saw Closer.
What do you think of that?
I thought it was good. I thought it was well done. You know, it's a human interest type of story. It's not my type of movie. You know, I don't think you can really get absorbed in a movie like that. At least I can.
So what, it was just not enough, it was too lifelike, or just not your life, or you didn't care about the people, or what?
Well, it was fun. I mean, it was a good contrast of characters. You know, the serious-minded guy and the playboy type of guy. I think it was a good combination of it. I just, you know, I didn't get the big kick out of the jokes that were told. I didn't think there was anything greatly funny in the picture.
It's kind of filthy, too.
Yeah, a little bit.
And the did you see the National Treasure one, the conspiracy thing?
I saw part of it, and I got a phone call. I had to go. I think it's a well-done fantasy.
All right. Did you see Meet the Fockers?
No, that's on our list. The first one was good, but yeah, I hear you got to see the first one in order to see the second one.
I doubt it.
I'm looking forward to that one. But I'm looking. I just got into the shuttle truck to take me back home.
Is there a bunch of people there?
Me and two other people.
Well, maybe we should close up the conversation so you have to talk too much in front of people you don't know. What do you think?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I love you, Pop. I hope I'm going to come out there soon.
Yeah, well, I hope so, hon. I look forward to seeing you.
Okay, Dad, take it easy. Okay, so let's sum it up. You should check out The Aviator. It tells the life story of Howard Hughes well, and DiCaprio is a good young actor who can really move. Closer is a well-done movie, but not my dad's type of picture. There are good characters, but it's a little filthy. He can only recommend half of National Treasure, but what he saw was a good fantasy. And finally, you should reject Ocean's 12. Reject it. That's right. So I don't want to be misunderstood about what I was saying before about tsunami relief. You know, it's just to me, you know, when Bush played 15 and then 35 and then somebody said it doesn't matter, just like Dick Cheney said to Paul O'Neill, definitely, you know, one thing we learned from Reagan is deficits don't matter. You can cook the books, you can make up the numbers, you can do whatever you want, but truth speaks louder than words. Victims of the earthquake in Bam, Iran, a year ago are still living in tents because USAID has not materialized in the amounts pledged. Back in 2002, Bush announced his Millennium Challenge account to give African countries development assistance up to $5 billion a year, but the account has yet to disperse a single dollar. So some of the money might come out of that account for tsunami victims, because that's what they do. They just pull it from other aid accounts. During the State of the Union address in 2003, Bush pledged $3 billion a year over 5 years to combat AIDS in Africa. However, his budgets have shorted that promise by nearly $1 billion over the first 2 years. But apparently, the military is doing a tremendous job dispersing food and services throughout the hurting countries. And this AIDS in Africa thing, something happened yesterday.
Well, yeah, and it kind of sent shockwaves throughout the continent. Mark, Nelson Mandela, mm-hmm. who's an icon, who I had the honor of meeting mm-hmm. and interviewing on two different occasions, held a news conference in the garden of his home in Johannesburg to announce that his son, his sole surviving son, Mangatho Mandela, who was 54 years old, mm-hmm. had been seriously ill for more than a month, but he died of AIDS. Mm-hmm. And Nelson Mandela held a news conference to say that he died of AIDS. This sent shockwaves across not just South Africa, but across the entire continent, because there has been, over time, a great deal of denial about the disease, about how widespread it is on the continent. They estimate 5 million South Africans alone are HIV positive. And for Nelson Mandela, who has spent the better part of the time since the end of his presidency,
yeah,
advocating for AIDS research, AIDS treatment, and AIDS awareness.
Yeah.
For him to get up and say this, now I think will open the floodgates for other people to speak more candidly about it. They didn't say he died of some mysterious disease or pneumonia or septic failure, which used to be one of the terms that folks used to use when they didn't want to say somebody died of HIV/AIDS. Mm-hmm. So for him to do this, first of all, was a very courageous thing, because obviously he's grief-stricken about the loss of his son, who was a lawyer. But he did it, I think, for a larger purpose. He wants to make sure that people are... He wants to open up the dialogue. He wants people to be able to say, yes, there are people in Africa who do, in fact, have AIDS. There's such denial on the continent, Mark, you wouldn't believe.
I believe it. There's denial in this country.
Yes, still is.
You know, there's not... There's
probably more denial in Africa because it is fundamentally a straight disease.
Yes.
And here, you know, for many years, it was primarily a gay disease, but it's now, you know, the numbers are rising dramatically in the straight community because of denial.
Yeah. And I mean, in Southern Africa, there are very specific things that go on within the economy that create the behaviors that lead to people contracting HIV and AIDS. And it has ravaged an entire generation on the continent. They are talking about millions upon millions of people already dead and dying.
I can't, you know, I live in such a small world, Riley, in terms of, like, you know, really knowing, you know, just how horrible these disasters and just what millions and millions of lives means. And even when I was watching TV yesterday in terms of the tsunami, like, until I saw this village where a guy went back to find his wife's family, that a village of 7,000 that was just, you know, demolished to only 300 survivors, I just didn't get a full idea of how horrible this stuff is. It's like, it hurts my heart, man. So we're going to talk about Alberto Gonzalez when we come back, which hurts my heart in a different way.
Yeah,
it makes me angry, and at least I can be angry at a specific person.
Yeah, he skated, didn't he?
Yeah, well, they're not really pressing him.
Yeah, and he's from Texas, and he skated that well. We'll be right back.
Too.
This is Air America Radio.
Mark Maron at 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, insomniacs, shut-ins, self-employed people that have nothing to do but listen to us. Thank God for you. Good morning. Yes, bloggers. How are you? MorningSedition.com if you want to blog. Please, no troll turds allowed. Well, you can come, but it gets everyone all worked up and riled up. Let them have a good time. Morning Sedition, you can be reached by email at sedition@airamericaradio.com. Look, if you want to help out with tsunami victim relief, you can go to morningsedition.com. We have links there. If you want to buy a Morning Sedition hat, or you want to see a dream diary illustrated, there's all kinds of stuff that we have there. You can also, what else can you do there? You can get all the books that we talk about on the air. There's comedy pieces on there.
There's merch.
Yes, merchandise. No swag, though. No swag.
That's for us.
You know, some people, you know, there's been an open debate over whether it's swag or swag for a lot of people. You say swag, I say swag.
I say swag.
That's Mark Riley, if you don't know Mark Riley.
Hi. You know me.
Yes, you do. Of course you do. Well, I just assume that every day we have one or two new listeners.
Yeah, one or two. I'm Mark.
Yeah, I'm Mark, too. You just missed the Gelman Riley debates that we had off the air.
Who's the cheapest? Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the biggest tightwad of them all?
It was a debate that was slowly drifting into the dozens.
Oh, yeah.
That was something else.
Yeah,
man.
The quarts, the gallons.
But I, Gelman's in.
Oh, here he is. Hey, you back?
Wait. I'm black by popular demand.
You still work here?
As I said earlier, Mark Maron. I don't know why I have to be the subject of all sorts of ridicule. On a Friday.
No ridicule.
It's his first week back.
Is this Friday?
He's calming down, you know?
What ridicule? Nice sweater.
I know you're no slave to fashion, Mr.
I know. I am definitely no slave to fashion. Just like you're no slave to heat.
Okay. Oh, man.
I think we'll leave now. Level of conversations is going downhill.
We're going to have to take that.
No, I know. I don't have to take it at all. I don't even have to work with this man. I don't know why.
He actually paid him for
what he does.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a feeling.
Hey, two words scare the bejesus right out of you. Boiler repair.
Oh, man. There you go. All right. I think Wayne Gelman.
Here's a sound Wayne Gelman's tenants never hear.
Wayne Gelman owns a couple of buildings up in the Bronx, and I'm not going to get too involved in this.
That would be the sound of a radiator.
I know. Some people don't know that, actually, in the Midwest.
I know. I just want to be clear.
Yeah. Well, Wayne, you want to address this at all?
How are you, Wayne?
I don't know what to say now. Thank you. You know, I'm like lost in the sauce.
You look good. Who's your barber, by the way? Who's your barber?
Oh, there you go. That's good.
You know, you should talk, Mr. Riley.
I
need a barber.
Well, I know you need one. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
You need it for some time.
Hey, hey.
I'm surprised your wife puts up with you.
At least I'm married.
No. Oh, man. We'll be back for another episode of Drummond and Riley.
This should be a weekly segment. I came in unarmed today.
I know. You better go write some stuff down, Wayne.
Wait a minute. I was young and needed the money. Come on, come back when you don't have to stay so long.
Oh, boy. That was rough. Gilman, you took some hits. Gilman took some hits there, but I think he's going to go out and regroup.
Yeah, I think he is. He'll be back just before the bottom of the hour. I'm in deep trouble now.
he's going to pull up some websites with you on it.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God. That was unbelievable. So let's get into this Gonzalez stuff. The committee was going at him, but not very hard. Right, Mark?
They weren't going at him that hard. Look, they had already predetermined what their roles were going to be, and I think they've already predetermined that the guy is going to pass. So they're going to give him a little trouble, but then they're going to all sit back and say, oh, yes. And see, the interesting thing is that there are some Democrats who are saying, well, we'll pass him through now as Attorney General as a prelude to making sure he never becomes a Supreme Court justice, because some people think that's what Bush has got in mind.
He's a weaselly little guy with not much of a personality. He's never tried a case. He's sort of geeky, which isn't necessarily a problem, but it's interesting to me how some of these guys who are like that, who become Bush's brain, people like him, like Karl Rove, like Dick Cheney, like Wolfowitz, that, you know, these guys are very, you know, they're quiet guys. They really look at Bush as their sort of metaphorical manhood on some level. Some of the high points for me from some of these transcripts was looking at this quote from Gonzalez, quote, my judgment was that it would not apply to Al-Qaeda in reference to the Geneva Convention.
Yeah.
They weren't a signatory to the convention. He's a smartass, which is even worse. And the other high point, you know, for me that I really thought was great was, you know, oddly, Republican Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, actually took a couple of good swipes at him. You know, he said that the administration dramatically undermined the war effort by getting cute with the law in reference to the torture. He quotes, quoting Lindsey Graham, I think you weaken yourself as a nation when you try to play cute and become more like your enemy instead of like who you want to be, he said. And Gonzalez responded by saying, quote, we are nothing like our enemy, Senator. In reference to beheadings of American terrorists. And Graham said, in quotes, but we're not like who we want to be and who we have been, and that's the point I'm trying to make. When you start looking at torture statutes and you look at ways around the spirit of the law, you're losing the moral high ground. I do believe that we've lost our way. Now, Senator, Lindsey Graham is a JAG. He's a military lawyer.
And he's a very conservative guy. Now, here's something that folks who are listening to us can do that will confound everybody.
Mm.
Call Lindsey Graham's office.
Mm-hmm.
You can call him at 202-224-3121. Just ask for his office.
Uh-huh.
That's the Capitol switchboard. They'll put you through to any member of Congress. Go to Lindsey Graham's office. Tell the first person, I want to thank Senator Graham for the statements he made. Yes.
Yeah, because like the Democrats, I mean, you know, Leahy, you know, he had some things to say. Why don't we hear that? Why don't we, you know, this is Gonzalez was asked by Leahy if the president can issue an executive order to torture. That's number one, Chris. Yeah, no problem. It's okay. Yeah, but, you know, okay, here we go.
Senator, I do believe there may come an occasion when the Congress might pass a statute that the president may view as unconstitutional. And that is a position and a view not just of this president, but many, many presidents from both sides of the aisle. Obviously, a decision as to whether or not to ignore a statute passed by Congress is a very, very serious one. And it would be one that I would spend a great deal of time and attention before arriving at a conclusion that, in fact, a president had the authority under the Constitution
Mr. Gonzalez, I'd almost think that you'd served in the Senate. You've learned how to filibuster so well. But could I ask a specific question? Does the president have the authority, in your judgment, to exercise a commander-in-chief override and immunize acts of torture?
With all due respect, Senator, the president has said we're not going to engage in torture. That is a hypothetical question that would involve an analysis of a great number of factors.
How about putting it this way? Do you think that other world leaders would have authority to authorize the torture of U.S. citizens if they deemed it necessary for their national security.
Senator, I don't know what laws other world leaders would be bound by. I think it would. I'm not in a position to answer that question.
Hey,
no,
why don't you just say, Judge Gonzalez, could you shut up? What are you talking about?
Yeah,
I mean, what a convoluted bit of business that was.
Well, you know, he didn't really want to answer the question, so he didn't answer the question. Here's a question I would ask him, and I know that this is not going to be an issue anywhere through this confirmation process. His predecessor, John Ashcroft, quiet as it's kept, had pushed United States attorneys all over the country to take on more federal death penalty cases. In other words, not to plea bargain with people who've been accused under the federal statutes of murder, but to go for the death penalty. He wanted, in some cases, his department to override attorneys general who were not seeking the death penalty. My question is, Alberto Gonzalez, will you continue that policy?
Right.
Because at this point, I don't know that that policy won't be continued and that there will be more federal death penalty cases coming online. And, you know, I'm just so unalterably opposed to the death penalty because I consider it to be state-sanctioned homicide. That would be a deal breaker in and of itself.
Yeah. America, we're about killing.
Killing.
Yeah. We'll
one
be
way
back.
Or the other.
Why don't we take a couple calls? It looks like people are sort of chomping at the bits out there to talk to us. There have been calls percolating around all morning. 866-303-2270 if you want to chime in on the Gonzalez hearings or on the very courageous Barbara Boxer, you know, taking it to the administration.
Taking it to the man.
That's right. You know, give us a buzz. 866-303-2270. We've got a couple more bits from the Gonzalez hearings after that. One, you know, pretty heavy one. 16 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Call 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yes, 21 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. The phone number is 866-303-2270. Let's hear that. You know, we're talking about Alberto Gonzalez. We're talking about the hearings. First I've got the Palm Pilot. Sometimes I space that out. Ramon came by yesterday in full slave attire. And by slave, I mean, you know, chains and with little nipple rings around them and the leather chaps.
That's little after hours action.
I would say so. He's definitely the underside of the relationship. 8 a.m. This is Alberto Gonzalez's Palm Pilot. 8 a.m. Wake up to special screaming alarm clock. Yeah, how do you like that? A little of this. All right, 8:15 a.m. breakfast, Rice Krispies, crackle, pop, pop, crackle, pop, pop. 9 a.m. get dressed, blue suit, red tie, and put on big boy shoes with 3-inch Cuban heels. Big boy shoes. 10 a.m. feel like celebrating. Call Dominatrix and tell her later I want the full Gitmo. 3 p.m. find out which writers in the Latin press have been calling me Uncle Tomas or Pio Tomas and have them tortured. 5 p.m. visit new attorney general's office. Convert Ashcroft's prayer bench into stocks with leather restraints. 7 p.m. lay in large supply of chapstick for arduous winter bush ass kissing. 10 p.m. fall asleep on human pyramid bunk beds.
Ooh.
I want to hear this sound from Arlen Specter going at. They're gently probing, is what any of these people did.
Yeah,
gently probing in a non sexual way.
Are you sure?
I think I just Yes, I did.
Yes, you did.
I
I would know.
That's right. You live there all the time. Here's Arlen Specter going at Gonzalez. Can we hear that?
The interrogator's techniques at Abu Ghraib shown on the widely publicized photographs.
Let me say, Senator, that as a human being, I am sickened and outraged by those photos. But as someone who may be head of the department, I obviously don't want to provide any kind of legal opinion as to whether or not that conduct might be criminal.
Yeah, can we hear it the right way, Chris?
Let me say, Senator, that as a human being, I am sickened and outraged by those photos. But as someone who may be head of the department, I obviously don't want to provide any kind of legal opinion as to whether or not that conduct might be criminal.
Oh, man, it's so loud in my head.
Yeah, right?
I kind of felt it. Did you feel
it? I felt it.
Let's take a call. I want you to think about this, Ryan. We'll take this call, and then I want you to give me your what kind of attorney general he'll be. George in Florida. How are you, George? What's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
All right, George.
I watched that thing last yesterday, and it was a show.
Yes.
I mean, the way I see it, the Republicans and the Democrats, they're in bed together.
Yeah,
You're the only one getting screwed.
Yeah.
if you think about it, years ago when McBride went up against Bush, look how quick McBride rolled over.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Kerry now.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to think maybe, you know, when a Democrat goes up against a Republican, it's like, well, the Democrat is the ace in the hole. Tell you what, fight me all you can, but when it comes time for the lemons, concede quickly.
Now, George, McBride was the Democrat that ran against Jeb Bush, right, in Florida?
Right, yeah, and he rolled over like in no time.
Yeah.
He didn't come out and say, hey, something wrong here.
Yeah, we're having some problems with the Democrats' cojones.
Yeah.
And you guys might not agree with this, but I think the worst thing that ever happened to the Democratic Party was Terry McCullough.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You think we disagree with you on that?
With that at all.
Okay.
No, I like Terry McCullough. He's a nice guy, but he shouldn't be DNC chair.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, George. We were talking about that earlier.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, because there's a bunch of Democrats now that want him to stay.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. You know, it's just like it's something's got to give. You know, hopefully we're going to get into that and find out, a few of the other people that are up for it and what they think. And I'd like to sort of explore that so we can get somebody with a little momentum, a little personality, a little, vision. Catherine in Sacramento, good morning.
Hi, Catherine.
Good morning. I love you guys.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say we're so delighted with Barbara Boxer.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Bush, huh?
That's right.
I don't know. But I think that clearly shows that you fellows need to recognize that courage is not related to your equipment.
No, you're absolutely right. And I got to tell you, Catherine, it would seem to me that between Barbara Boxer and Stephanie Tubbs Jones, they are the poster people for having more women in Congress.
And Barbara Lee.
And Barbara Lee, yes, absolutely. Thank She's the one that had the voted against the war.
Thank you very much, Catherine.
I liked Arlen Specter and Lindsey
Graham. Lindsey Graham. Yeah, me too. Yeah,
we got to be nonpartisan here.
Okay. Yeah, they got to hit them a little harder, I think.
Right. That's true. That's true. Thank you so much for taking the call.
Sure. Thank you, Catherine.
You know, she's absolutely right. I never, ever assumed differently. I mean, as far as, NADS go, both my wives were more,
more NADS-y than you?
A little bit, you know. I generally defer to them for, like, you know, the big, like if there's a dispute that we need to be taken care of. I'd be like, honey, why don't you go see what's
going on? Honey, he insulted me.
Yeah, could you take care of that? So what do you think? What kind of guy is this going to be as an attorney
general? Who, Gonzalez?
Yeah.
Pliant.
Yeah.
I mean, he has shown his malleability in every job he's ever had with George W. Bush. I think you may be right. Bush must have some thing that mystical, magical power over guys like him and Melman and Karl Rove and the rest of
the group. He makes them feel big. He enables them to feel like they have he's literally their symbolic penis. I believe that George Bush is playing the part of President Penis for everybody, for all these guys, Rove, Cheney,
the whole crew.
Yeah.
Well, Gonzalez will follow the party line, as certainly as Condoleezza Rice will follow the party line. This is George Bush's second term. I don't want to hear no bad news cabinet.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Oh, we're going to give him bad news. We're going to give him bad news every day.
We're going to be in bad news.
We can to stifle the momentum of the legislation they want to push through and keep people aware of the war in Iraq and stay on this.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about that with our guest when we come back. Colonel David Hackworth is going to be here to discuss Rumsfeld in Iraq and much more after the break.
Yeah, you think maybe he can tell us why Rumsfeld still has a job?
I think he can.
This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, on the air and online at MorningSedition.com from Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yes, sir.
Looks like we've got someone on the phone. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world, as you all know. So now on the phone, once again, is Planet Push correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning.
morning, Mark. God's got a sponge, and he's mopping up a sin storm. He's a quicker pickup.
All right. Today, let's talk about President Bush's response to tsunami tragedy, specifically.
Yes.
To the tsunami tragedy, specifically his use of his dad, his brother Jeb, former President Clinton.
Oh, and what a magnificent, compassionate, conservative gene pool that is, Mark. But I can't for the life of me understand why that person, I can't say his name.
Bill Clinton.
Oh, thank you.
Bill Clinton.
Thank you for sparing me that. Was invited along in this time of tragedy and suffering. His whole I feel your pain thing. So inappropriate.
What are you talking about? I mean, what are you getting at?
Why do you liberals insist on whitewashing that man's despicable behavior?
Bill Clinton.
When that man indulged his sticky left with that harlot in the Oval Office, he stained the entire tsunami relief for decades.
How could we possibly
attend to the suffering of others with that mental picture in our minds?
Well, I'm
thinking about it right now, and I'm repulsed.
I don't even understand. I don't understand. How does what he did then relate to, forget it. Tell me, why is it okay for Bush Sr. and Jeb to help out, but not Bill Clinton?
Gladly. The Tsunami Initiative is a humanitarian effort, and President George Herbert Walker Bush is already responsible for one of the greatest humanitarian acts in human history.
What are you talking about? What's that?
I'm talking about his proud Republican seed spawn, George W. Bush, and thus saved mankind. Amen.
Well, look,
hello.
I might agree with that statement if you just replace the word saved with the word destroyed. How about that? But anyway, what about... what are you talking about? We go through this every time I talk to you. How about Jeb Bush?
Well, okay, Jeb Bush was sent over there because of his experience fighting back and destroying hurricanes in Florida using only his mind. Jeb Bush is one of the most powerful mentalists of our generation, Mark. Succumb to his will.
You're crazy. You're crazy. Are you saying that Jeb Bush is capable of preventing hurricanes with his mind?
I love it when I teach you something new.
How many
hurricanes are there in Florida every year? Five or six, maybe? I assure you, there'd be hundreds if it weren't for good old Jeb and that powerful noggin of his, turning those storms harmlessly out to sea, Mark, waving his hand over the water.
You know what I think, Lawton? I think this is the worst natural catastrophe in 40 years, and Bush can't deal with it, so he sent his family out there, and they can't deal with it either. Once again, he's trying to spin human suffering into political gain. Am I right, Lawton? Am I right? That's right. Cry.
Clinton was right. I do feel their pain. I am so freaked out by the pictures from Asia.
Okay.
I haven't taken a shower in a week. I smell bad, Mark.
Okay.
I smell bad.
I feel
bad. Daddy Bush and Jeb, they're just eunuchs.
Okay.
They want to bring relief to Asia. Those two clowns couldn't relieve themselves in a public abode.
Let it out, buddy.
There's no relief.
It's okay. We all feel sad about this.
Clowns.
It's okay.
The first term, for God's sake.
All right. We all feel We all feel bad about this. It's okay to let it out. What's up, Eddie? You got something in your throat?
Jeb does it with his mind, Mark. He just closes his eyes and stretches out his hands.
No.
And the clouds
part and the sun comes out.
You should see it sometimes. It's inspirational. I just sit there and my breath's taken away by the power of Jeb's mind.
Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton.
You know, that's not fair. That is not fair. You cut that out.
Bill Clinton.
God bless you.
All right.
Deal with it. Don't say it again.
See you later.
Don't say it again.
Okay, Lawton. Take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Got a thing with our former president, huh?
Always interesting. Joining us by phone, switching gears here, is Colonel David Hackworth. He is a co-founder of Soldiers for Truth, senior military columnist for Defense Watch magazine, and writes a weekly column called Defending America. His latest book is Steal My Soldiers' Hearts. He's also the author of the Vietnam Primer, the Fighting Man's Bible for Guerrilla Warfare in Vietnam, which was published by the Pentagon and used as a training manual during the war. Good morning, Colonel. How are you?
Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's both. We're both Marks. Now, I just, you know, there's an article out today, Colonel, about a review, an open-ended review of the military's entire Iraq policy that was coming out of the Pentagon. It's including troop levels, training programs for Iraqi security forces, and the strategy for fighting the insurgents. Okay, so this is coming out of the Pentagon. I guess the guy who's in charge is General Gary E. Luck. My question is, when are they just going to investigate Rumsfeld?
Well, let's address one at a time.
Okay.
Rumsfeld, just for the record, is one of the most despicable human beings that I have ever witnessed. And I've got to say that he is the most incompetent Secretary of Defense I think our country has ever had. And that includes Robert McNamara, who gave us the 8 horrible years of Vietnam. Let's talk about the Army's bottom-up review with General Gary Luck. First of all, I know General Luck,
mm-hmm.
really top soldier. If you could give anybody that mission to go over there and say, where are we making our mistakes? What do we need to improve? He's the guy, straight shooter, not like so many of the top generals who are kind of more like corporate CEOs rather than two-fisted leaders. This guy's a two-fisted leader. I think we can expect from him the truth, and it's about time this review, 2 years into the bloody occupation phase, which has been a total disaster from the get-go, and probably in U.S. military history, the worst military operation ever conducted. I'm not talking about the war-fighting aspect, but I am talking about since about mid-April when it went into the occupation and there was simply no plan. And we witnessed on the tube, and our soldiers have come home and told us what terrible, terrible confusion went on and is still going on in Iraq. It's a terrible mess.
Colonel Hackworth, let me ask you a kind of two-part question.
Please call me Hack, Mark.
Okay, Hack.
Mark.
It seems as though there is going to the temporary increase of 30,000 troops in Iraq that Congress has already approved. Now the military may be looking to make permanent, and at the same time, leaders in the Army are seeking a change in policy that would allow for longer and more frequent call-ups of some Army reservists. Take those two things together and tell us how it's going to affect the troops on the ground.
Well, first of all, the United States ground forces, that's the U.S. Marine Corps and U.S. Army, are stretched beyond the breaking point. They are broken. They are overcommitted, trying to do too much with too little. They don't have enough grunts. They don't have enough boots on the ground. The key to winning in Iraq, and I think Iraq is winnable if we can get enough boots on the ground, but right now, we haven't had sufficient force on the ground, and everyone I speak to, and I talk to about by email at least 100 soldiers a day and by phone and fax and so on, another 50 that have just returned, all of them have told me for almost 2 years now, we simply have not had sufficient ground forces to fight, contained, to stabilize the insurgents.
How many would we need?
Well, it depends upon how many enemy soldiers you have. When you look at all of Iraq, 70% of Iraq is in sunshine and in peace. 30%, mainly that area in Baghdad and north of Baghdad, so-called the Sunni Triangle, is the area of contention, and that is where your force is going to be needed, and it depends upon how many G's there are, how many guerrillas there are, how many insurgents there are. The ratio normally, with a reasonable ratio, is 10 to 1, meaning 10 counterinsurgents for every insurgent. That can go up depending on the ability, the tenacity, style of terrain they're fighting in, to 20 to 1. So, according to the Iraqi government recently, they have said, and I think it might be an exaggeration because it doesn't track with what I'm getting from our military intelligence folks there, but the Iraqi government is saying there's 30,000 insurgents. Well, just do the 10 to 1 ratio. That means we need 300,000 ground troops.
More.
Yeah, more, well, 150 more.
Right. Okay.
So,
well,
at least we need another 50,000. What I'm getting from guys over there, they're saying, my battalion is doing what a brigade is doing. My brigade is doing what a division should be doing.
Wow.
And they just don't have sufficient force to do the job.
Colonel Hackworth, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to put this blame.
I thought you were going to call me Hack.
All right, Hack.
There you go.
Hack, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I just want to put this blame squarely on Rumsfeld. Do you have a problem with that?
I have no problem whatsoever. I think he's the biggest bum and liar we've ever seen.
Beautiful. It's 866-303-2270 is our number. We'll take calls after our conversation with Hack. If you want to go to his website, it is www.hackworth.com. He welcomes emails from soldiers. We'll be back with him after this. It's 45 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Call 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're going to land this thing. On the phone with us is Colonel David Hackworth. He's the co-founder of Soldiers for the Truth. His website is www.hackworth.com. He welcomes emails from soldiers. Okay, Hack, let's get into this. Donald Rumsfeld is the guy who is responsible for all these miscalculations in terms of the troop numbers, in terms of how well the soldiers are equipped. Everything falls on his lap, and he does nothing but disperse blame and evade responsibility. What do we got to do to bring this to justice, to bring this to light, this guy's lies?
Well, I think light a fire on those very people who are listening to your program, Mark.
Okay.
And what I find, and it's been very consistent from long before March of 03, when we marched into Iraq, was the lies. And I recently had a direct confrontation with the Pentagon. I went to them in November and said, look, I have colonels in your office in the Pentagon saying to me that Donald Rumsfeld is not signing letters to the parents of killed in action, but having a mechanical arm sign those. Is this true? The Pentagon came back to me and said, Donald Rumsfeld is signing all of these letters himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sent me another fuzzy letter that says, we can't tell you anything because it's our communications with a parent is privileged, and which made me smell a rat. End result was they recently admitted that Donald Rumsfeld did have a mechanical arm that signed these letters. Now, listen, Mark, if they'll lie about signing a letter to the parent of a soldier that was killed in Iraq and Afghanistan, wouldn't they lie about weapons of mass destruction, which we know was a flat lie? Wouldn't they lie about the connection between Saddam Hussein and 911? They're responsible. Saddam planned it all by himself. That proved to be a lie. This business about having a occupation plan for the occupation of Iraq after the war fighting. And the war fighting was a simple thing. It was like Arnold Schwarzenegger fighting mini-me. It was no opposition. The occupation part of the operation should have been the main thing. There was no plan. Donald Rumsfeld was responsible. Now we're told the war is going splendidly. We've heard this for almost 2 years, Mark. But guess what? They're sending General Luck out there to find out what the hell is wrong.
Yeah, 9 guys were killed yesterday.
Absolutely. And it is a war that the way we're fighting it, we can't win it. We have to have sufficient forces on the ground. And that's what, in Vietnam, I was there 5 years. I wrote the book for the Army. They asked me to write the book, The Vietnam Primer, which was a handy-dandy little guidebook. Any listener that was a private or a sergeant in Vietnam read that book. The problem was, Mark, the generals didn't read it.
Mm.
And guess what? Those generals today, I sent a number of copies of Vietnam Primer over there to the people to read, and I'm afraid that the people, again, won't read it. And it doesn't take some kind of brain surgeon to whip a gorilla. It just takes common sense. You've got to go into an area. You have to win the people to your side. In a guerrilla warfare, the people are like water in a pond, and the gorillas like the fish. What you must do is separate the water from the fish. What happens to the fish? He flumps up against the bank, and you pick him up and throw him on the barbecue.
Okay.
That's the end of it.
All right.
Hack, let me ask you about what the soldiers are actually going to be doing over the next few weeks as we lead up to the elections in Iraq. We have two former National Security Advisors, Brent Scowcroft and Zbigniew Brzezinski, both saying that this they don't feel that this vote is actually going to come off the way the Bush administration is saying they think it will. And to what extent do you think soldiers are going to get specifically put in harm's way trying to secure these election facilities?
Well, what the soldiers should be doing is conducting maximum offensive operations, and that's not tanks running through houses and tearing them down, but setting out very careful operations conducted at night, during the daytime, using ambushes, trying to break up the guerrillas' modus operandi, trying to break up the way he does his job. And if you apply an offensive spirit to the operation rather than a defensive thing, which I see we're having, look at Mazel and that huge mess hall where a bomber got in there and killed 22 Americans. That should not have happened, but that's a result of this base camp mentality. Commanders think they're doing their soldiers a favor. They're looking after their soldiers to give them wonderful food and a gym and a coffee bar and all of this stuff. But bottom line, looking after soldiers is making sure they come back from the war alive and not blown to smithereens.
That's right. Thank you very much, Colonel David Hackworth. Hack, it was great talking to you.
Great talking to you, Hack.
I'm standing by you two, Mark.
Okay. Appreciate it.
www.hackworth.com is his email or his website. He welcomes emails from soldiers.
Wow, it's amazing. You know, he doesn't mince words, does he?
No, he's great. Yeah, you know, and the question is, it's like even when you separate the fish from the pond, it's you know, when he believes it's a winnable war, you know, it's a situation now that never seems to stop. And I just, you know, I just wonder, you know, at the pace and what rate the insurgents are going to keep growing. It's a very frightening thing. Let's take a call from a little off subject. It looks like from Tony in Phoenix. How are you?
Hey, Tony.
Good, fine. How are you guys? Thank
good.
You very much for your show. I really appreciate it earlier in the morning here in this red state.
We appreciate you calling, man.
Yeah, what's going on?
Well, I'd like to express my extreme disappointment, and I don't know what else to say, extreme disappointment in the senators that did not stand up with Senator Boxer.
Yeah, I am too. They had nothing to lose by doing it. It would have been a symbolic gesture, and it certainly would have, you know, invigorated the Democratic Party, but they don't seem to care. Either that or they're a little spineless and worried about their own careers.
Or that's both.
Yeah, probably a little mixture of both. Well,
yeah.
You know, have a good weekend, Riley.
Yeah, have a great one, and of course, we got some stuff coming up next week also. My goodness.
Yeah, more with the Congress, tort reform, Social Security. This stuff's not going to go away. Alberto Gonzalez, the war in Iraq, tsunami relief. You know, we got a full plate. Here's the liberal agenda for today from the Streisand compound. One, for challenging Ohio's votes, send Barbara Boxer extra large jockstrap. Nice work, stud. Two, demand that the new Michael Keaton movie, White Noise, be renamed Multicultural Noise. Three, boycott the use of $20 bills to protest slave-owning President Andrew Jackson. Four $5 bills with Lincoln's face work just as well. Four, to raise public consciousness about stem cell research, get Hollywood's producers to create new show, Stem Cell Research, Special Victims Unit. Five, today's phrase is dropped into conversation. You think that was a real hearing yesterday? Wake up, sheeple. You can do anything with CGI now. Alberto Gonzalez is just a bunch of dots in a computer, man. Wake up. How clear does it have to be?
There you go. Coming up on Monday, Jeff Jarvis is going to be back, friend of the room. Bugmachine.com. He's going to be here for our weekly media roundup. Maren, have a great weekend.
You
huh?
too. You too, man.
It's been fun. This is Air America Radio.